This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, before we get started, I have a new shirt.
I've seen this one before.
Boy, no, I put my job title on a shirt.
All right, let's see it.
You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Get ready.
I'm ready.
Shit show.
Supervisor.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 with the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week we are talking about 2025, the best of, the hits, all of the commanders and decks, some stats, some things of the year, what cards were good, what commanders were good. I'm repeating myself.
We're doing our own version of Wrapped, and not like a Food Network show, if that's confusing anybody.
Do you think there's a Wrapped Food Network show?
You know what? I'm thinking of Unwrapped, hosted by Mark Summers.
I don't know what that is at all.
I checked Mark Summers into his hotel room one time,
but
it
nice?
Was cool. Exceptionally nice. Oh, I really like that man. Please don't ruin it for me in the comments.
Oh no.
Someone, I don't know. You never know you with never these know. People. But yeah, so we're going to basically go over everything that came out in 2025,
yeah.
Figure out what mostly impacted CEDH on the CEDH side, talk about the best decks, all that kind of stuff.
I
think
wait.
We can move on from the intro.
Great.
We'll do a whole run through of every set that came out. I counted 6 sets that came out this year.
You don't happen to have like top cards from the set or anything, do you?
Oh, that's what I did.
That's
yeah,
what we're
I went
doing.
Through and I
oh,
went like,
great. You're so good at your job. She, the supervisor, sure, the title. There we go. All right, what was the first set of 2025? Are we doing it in numerical order?
Yeah, or? Numerical order from set 1 through set 6. Yeah.
So, you know what I mean.
Set number 1
yeah.
was Aetherdrift.
Aetherdrift.
Did you remember that the set came out at all?
Let me try to remember one card from the set at all.
Great, okay.
Nothing's coming to mind.
Can I give you a hint?
Yeah.
This was mostly a command zone set.
Hashatan was in this set.
Boom, yeah, Hashatan. There were actually 3 commanders that people were very excited about at the time. Hashatan was the biggest one because
yeah.
of its ability to work super well with Lion's Eye Diamond and get uninteractable wins into play, which I think we all ended up realizing wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So we moved on from that. Loot, the Pathfinder, was another one that came out this year.
I think that loot is almost something.
Almost something. But not quite anything. I don't like its color combination. I think that even Rog Thrasios isn't a rug deck. It's more like a Simic deck.
It's more like a Simic deck that splashes red normally, yeah. And I think Rog Thras is kind of a little bit of a better strategy if you're in that those colors-ish.
Because the problem with this color combination and Food Chain is that you can't really find Food Chain very
yeah.
easily, and you still needed an additional mana up in order to go through your Food Chain loop with this deck, too.
Not a deck that I want to play.
Not a lot of other people by the time the summer came around, so.
Yeah.
The last one then was Ketramos.
Ketramos.
This deck was...
Almost.
Ketra Almost
is what it should have been called. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a very interesting deck that could let you get card advantage off of exiling cards from, like, your graveyard
yeah.
normally, but only on your turn, and it was essentially, like, another way to build your own Necropotence and put really complicated win lines together, either with Abdel Adrian, or you would do something. How did I win the game?
Infinite Mana and Blind Obedience?
Probably some people did with Abdel Adrian,
yeah.
but I didn't play Abdel Adrian in the deck. I did some other stupid
some with, like,
fucking shit, I
Angel's
bet.
Grace, maybe?
Oh, you know
Sephiroth?
What? There was a card that said whenever you discarded a card, you would, like, deal a damage and gain a life to someone. So you could, like, go through your whole deck and almost
okay.
take out the table.
Yeah.
This is why I took it apart, because it was so hard to win.
Yeah.
It was so hard to win.
Truly, it's like, these decks are all kind of set up to fail, because if they are good enough to be, like, CDH playable, they're broken. Kinnan is, like, one of the most powerful commanders we've ever gotten. Like, in order to keep up with partners, the commander has to be completely broken. So, like, Ketramos and Loot and Hashatan, these are all powerful commanders. It's like, there's no doubt about they are strong cards. They do more powerful things than cards in years past have done, for sure. But to compete with the top 10 decks of CDH is very, 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 very tricky. So,
yeah, exactly.
Although Ketramos might not be, like, a tier 1 CDH deck, I do think it can still do, like, very powerful things.
There's yeah.
All of these decks can. They just don't do it as consistently or as quickly or as efficiently as the top 10 decks in the format.
As we're talking about it, I feel like Ketramos could be a fun bracket for
yeah.
EDH deck.
Because it is so difficult. difficult to like fully go infinite with that deck, like just don't do that. Go like semi-infinite.
Yeah.
And then just make a powerful black-white deck.
I think so too. Yeah. So it actually ended up that even though we thought that Aether Drift was going to be a command zone set, it ended up really being more beneficial for the 99 of a lot of decks because Bright Glass Gear Hulk came from this set. That and is now a one card win condition in Toph, the first Metalbender, Marath. That's not a great example, but I played against Sam from Halion Saltmine this year and he did that to me.
What do you get in that one?
Walking Ballista. Dude, you're asking me questions about Marath. I'm having a hard time remembering, but because I think that didn't get to go off. Instead, I think he won with Eldritch Evolution instead.
I know with Toph, you can get like a Sensei's Divining Top and a
Candelabra of Thanos.
Candelabra of Thanos. And with Toph, you can then make infinite mana as long as you also have Gaia's Cradle or a Mana Vault. Or you could just go get Mana Vault and Candelabra and make infinite mana or get the top to make infinite card draw. You have like a couple different options.
It probably
to, like,
depends on like what else is in your hand.
What the board state is.
Yeah, but it's given like these Naya decks a one card win condition to go get not just like card advantage if they need to continue to grind, but also these combo pieces that are super important for them to be able to win.
Tyam is also a big one that really uses this because you can both get combo pieces and card advantage if you need to.
Oh, there's so many things that are one mana that like enter with three sin counters on them or some shit.
Yeah, and it's like one or less too, right? It's an enchantment, artifact, or creature that has mana value one or less.
That's why you can get Walking Ballista. So like anything else that costs X only, you could go find that.
Stuff like Urza's Saga says specifically zero or one, so you can't get a Walking Ballista with it or whatever.
Or like an Asper Sentinel is something very important that you cannot get with a Urza's Saga.
Right, yeah, because it has a white pip. It doesn't cost one generic, it costs a white, whereas Bright Steel Gear Hulk, what is it?
Bright Glass.
Bright Glass Gear Hulk.
You know, it would be way more of a 4-4 if it was Bright Steel instead of Bright Glass.
I agree. Yeah, Bright Glass. That's not...
I'm going to shatter the shit out of that thing.
Either way, its ability to find Esper Sentinel, Lion's Eye Diamond, Sensei's Divining Top, Sol Ring, Mana Vault, Mystic Remora. It can find so many different things. I think that's why it makes this one so powerful. And it gets two things. Not that many cards do that.
I also put Stock Up on this list too. But does this card see him play anywhere anymore?
Rao plays it, right?
Rao could, yeah. But I don't feel like Rao wants cards in his hand a lot of the time for some reason. He keeps wanting to put him in exile.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe that's just the rate of all of the cards that do that.
It's so interesting as I feel like Stock Up is like the difference between like Vintage and Legacy of power levels. Whereas in Vintage, it's kind of unrelated to CDH, but Stock Up is really good in Vintage because you have Black Lotus and all this mana that's really cheap. Whereas in like CDH and Legacy, Stock Up is not quite as good because the fast mana is not quite as absurd.
Well, the card advantage is also not really there in CEDH either. Burst card draw in CEDH historically has been significantly worse than over the time advantage engines that you don't have to like keep feeding.
And if you are doing the burst draw, it's with Necro and Ad Nauseam. So you're drawing 30 rather than 2 out of 5.
Yeah, it's way easier in like a 60 card format where you get to play multiple copies of every card because you want to go, I need to find a Force of Will and something else. I need to find piece of mana and something else. Like, and then that way you can guarantee almost that you're going to find one of the two things that you need. That's... And then that you only need to use against one other player.
I think that's a big part of it. Decks like Show and Tell in Legacy also, because Show and Tell is a deck that does use
Stock Up.
Stock Up. Show and Tell is a deck that does use Stock Up in Legacy because you're right. I think it's looking for specific things. It's looking for Show and Tell and Force of Will or something. And you have four of in your 60 card deck. Whereas like you're saying with us, it's not likely you're going to find your Ad Nauseam if you cast Stock Up looking
for it. That's the thing. So if you don't have any in your opening hand and you somehow get to make three mana on turn one, now out of 53 cards, there's four options in your deck.
Right.
Versus if we do the same thing in CEDH, out of 93 cards, there's one option in your deck.
Right. Yeah,
way different.
This card I do still think should be on your radar if you're doing bluish storm
things. Loved it in VV.
There are certain decks that can use it, but I don't think it's, it's not a staple for every deck. I had fun playing it when you get to copy it, it feels great. I don't think it makes the cut for all of the top tier decks, but on the radar.
Definitely on the radar, yeah.
We haven't really rated any of these cards. Do we care? It's Christmas. Who cares?
You know? It's Christmas, yeah. I don't want to judge them too harshly because it is the holidays.
It's the holidays.
Merry Christmas, Aether Drift.
Did you do it on purpose?
I did not. All right, the next set was Tarkir Dragonstorm.
Oh.
I was ready to clown on this one until I did another scroll through of the whole set. And boy, oh boy, am I glad that I did.
There's a couple cards?
Dude, I totally forgot Voice of Victory was from this set.
Oh, yeah.
That changes everything.
That's true. That's 5 out of 5. We just said we weren't judging any of these cards. But Voice of Victory is a CDH staple right now, I'd say.
Everyone look at what Voice of Victory is and what it did. Because that's what you should be modeling yourselves after.
Yeah, that card is so good. good. I think you have to have a pretty good reason to not play it in your white deck. I'm not playing in Sisse. I don't care if you can interact with me on
really
my turn.
You don't really cast spells, I guess.
I don't really cast spells, and I can always just wait and do it on your turn or something.
And then this doesn't help, I guess.
But I think in a lot of white decks, Voice of Victory is so good.
It's one of the reasons to be in white specifically. A lot of the other times, like, you can just excuse white from your deck altogether if you're protected, or like you said in Sisse, like, if you are trying to win on someone else's turn. But most decks are trying to win on their own turn at sorcery speed with, like, infinite mana and Finale of Devastation. Right. And having this to make sure that your opponents have to have Biseiju and Odawara in order to make sure that they can do anything against you, I think is really strong.
The cards are very powerful, and I have nothing else to say. Voice of Victory is really good.
Yeah, and we also got Nature's Rhythm in this set, too.
Nature's Rhythm, awesome. Nature's Rhythm is another awesome card. I have it in Sisse, and I do think it goes in, like, basically any guy's Cradle deck, or any green deck, maybe?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you're playing Finale of Devastation for not just the infinite mana outlet, I think this is another great thing to do.
If Bright Glass Gear Hulk is good because it's two tutors, this is also, I feel, good for a similar reason of it kind of being two tutors.
It's better than Invasion of Ikoria, right? You would always play this over the Invasion.
Always is tough, but yeah, I would.
You're right, because if you're playing Pyrogoyf and Tarmogoyf, you want to have the battle in your deck. You're right. Yeah.
But realistically, yeah, I think it's a lot better, especially because that one can only get non-humans.
Which is the most forgotten line of text, I think, ever for me.
Right. And that sucks because you want to be able to get your protection if you need to. You want to go get Grand Abolisher.
Yeah. What's the point of surprising in a creature if you can't do that?
I like Nature's Rhythm a lot more than that one.
Colossal Grave Reaver also allowed Ur-Dragon to come back. I mean, it never did well in a CEDH tournament, but
it gave it a new combo line.
It was a fun thing that you could do. Yeah. How do you spell colossal?
Dude beats me. C-O-L?
The Pokemon Colossal
fucked
me up with the spelling of colossal, because I always go C-O-A-L.
That card is also, like, as a magic card, cracked in half.
Oh, God. Yeah, the Grave Reaver?
Dude, it's so insane. Not, like, in CDH, but, like, I have, like, a casual, like, Millover stuff deck, and it, like, accidentally changed through so many cards if you have a bunch of, like, Seder Wayfinder type cards. Very fun deck. But it just allows you to put extra things into the battlefield. Very broken card. Not so much in CDH.
Not so much in CEDH, yeah. So, no good commanders from this set. This was completely a 99 set, and it was the first set review that we had that was sponsored by Wizards of the Coast.
Oh, fun.
And a fun little fact that we haven't had any since then, too, so that's kind of fun, so.
I guess they didn't like it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Cubby, don't put this card in, but one person who did like us left.
What are we talking about?
We're moving on from Tarkir Dragonstorm. We are going to talk about Final Fantasy, which for sure was a Command Zone set. Although we did get cards like Starting Town and Tataru Taru.
Starting Town's great.
Starting Town's great.
Still love it.
My verdict is still out on Tataru Taru.
I'm unsure. I think you have to have inherent synergies with your commander to play that one.
I think so too, yeah. Like if you're Marnius, I think it makes a lot more sense. But I'm thinking about cutting it in Timna Malcolm because it doesn't help Timna. Like I can make some treasures. My commander makes treasures though too, and it doesn't get me cards with Timna, so I don't know that I love it.
I think I've liked it in Sisse because it's a legend and it makes mana, but I could see cutting it.
I think that makes sense more in Sisse, but we got five commanders from this set that include Vivi, Terra, Kefka, Yshtola, the Esper one, and then the Wandering Minstrel also came out in this set.
Yeah, I think I still stand by that. I don't think Yshtola is any good.
Also stand by the same thing with Wandering Minstrel right now, only because I don't think the best deck list has come out for it quite yet. Lands, which is a new archetype as of 2025, is also not going to crack the top most played decks or strategies of the year either.
The new Lands decks have been really cool to watch pop off. I agree. I don't think they're quite there yet. I have high hopes for Wandering Minstrel down the line. I think in the future, the commander is going to get better. I think if it gets a little bit more support, there's a couple more Lands related things you could do.
We will. We already got two Lands related sets this year. We're going to get more Lands related sets all of the time.
And I think Wandering Minstrel is just like the perfect CDH commander for a lot of those homes. If you're not doing something hyper specific like Lumra or something in the command zone, Wandering Minstrel covers it all. The other one's Kefka. Kefka's fine. I like Kefka. I've seen it do powerful things. I've seen it be a little bit slow. I think it's a fine deck.
I think it's fine too. When I've played against it, I have not been very impressed with it, but that's because my deck skews the metagame entirely.
Right, yeah. Fucks everything up.
Yeah. Exactly. But when I've played Vivi against Kefka, you know, there is, it's a completely different dynamic. dynamic, and it does feel like it can grind. It has a big range of things that it can do, so it can kind of match your player style no matter what it is,
yeah,
which is kind of nice. The problem is that there's just a lot of other stuff that does the same things that it does better. Like Tim Necrom can also be built to match your player style a little bit better,
right,
and it's just a better deck.
What Kefka gives you is just like those five fun cards that you like want to play just like because you want to, like Displacer Kitten and stuff. Like, yes, I know Displacer Kitten can be quite good, but it can also be kind of a lot to set up. But this deck, I feel like, is a great Displacer Kitten because with all the cards that you get off of your Ad Nauseam or your Heuristic Study or whatever, you can use them to flicker your Kefka and get more advantage. I do think that's something. I personally would rather do other Grixis stuff, but I get Kefka. I think it's something.
Well, we already talked about Vivi and Terra a lot last week, so we don't have to talk about them so much, but
both solid decks. Vivi solid, Terra maybe not so much, but I like it a lot.
You know what's funny? We talked about how not solid it was, and then like after we recorded that episode, Ian was the comedian, MTG, was like, oh hey, I just top forward with Vivi this weekend. It was so much fun.
What do you know?
But historically, he does well with any deck. Yeah. I gave him a piece of pie once and he beat me with it. So after Final Fantasy, we have Edge of Eternity, which is another 99 set, even though we didn't get a lot of stuff.
Tezzeret, I remember this one. I mentioned this one earlier. I think Tezzeret's a real card.
It's
so good,
Yeah, if you're on Bright Glass Gear Hulk for the Sensei's Divining Top, this is another great card to add to that list.
I think it's great if you define specific things, like you said, like Lions of Diamond Sensei's Top. I think it's also good if you're playing artifact strategies. It's awesome if you're doing anything with the One Ring or if you're doing anything with keys, like untapping the One Ring. It's awesome just like it can be two tutors, which is, I feel like, something that we've talked about a lot with cards that have come out this year. But the fact that you can like activate it right away to go search some things, play some artifacts to bump up the loyalty, and then next turn it's like loyalty was high and you have a blocker maybe or something, keep it around, and you minus it again to go search your library again. I think that can be really powerful. So
yeah, I think so too. This is another card that's like also seen a ton of 60 card format play, and like the more powerful 60 card format.
You
so.
Just whooped me in Vintage with it, which hasn't been released yet, but we're going to release a game soon where that it is obviously so powerful.
This card just does a lot of really good things that a lot of decks want to see in those first two lines that it has, or I guess the second and third line that it has, and the first and the third line aren't as good, but
yeah, it really is just tutors. That's what it does. It sets up two tutors. What are the other abilities that it does? It can
I like the untap ability.
That was good. Tutor. Good. Yeah. You're right. That's true. The untap ability.
But making
is nice.
A non artifact creature an artifact creature, that's I don't nothing. Like so much. Yeah. Aim for that. But that's pretty much Edge of Eternities. I mean, the lands decks also got a lot of tools from this set.
Yeah.
Like we got Horizon Explorer, which is another Amulet of Vigor, but way worse. We got Ice Till Explorers, which is a deck that I saw on Sam's table. If you guys haven't seen Sam Black's new show, he was talking about this in a new version of Rog'Sai that he was building that was more lands land focused. I'm glad he also did another newer video about the regular Rog'Sai builds too. But
good one.
But it's really cool that like this is like another axis that like you can fight on that is like something that is available. And Ice Till Explorers, I think, is like what is going to make a lot of those lands decks really come together.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think the card's a little bit slow. I think 4 mana is really slow. It's part of the glue that you need right now to do the land stuff.
It was nice to get in 2025 while we were still in mid-range hell, but I'm expecting that the format's going to pick up speed in 2026, which means that I think it's going to fall off pretty heavily. Because right now, well, we'll talk about that later.
But the lands thing has going for it is its uninteractability. It's not its speed. It's not really like known for its speed. It's good in a mid-range world where everyone's got counterspells and you're doing land shit or whatever.
I mean, I had Ice Till Explorers make me 6 mana with one Crystal Vein once.
So I think it's great.
It's really cool. There's awesome stuff that you can do with it, but it's just, it was also 4 mana to get out.
Right.
So
that's it. Merely made 2 mana, kind of.
Basically, yeah. And then we got the Spider-Man set.
Oh.
Everyone's least favorite Magic set since Homelands, I think.
Yeah, dude, this one's weird, especially like looking back at the cards that we had talked about for the podcast for the Spider-Man set. I realized like all of them were dog shit. Like Green Goblin was the closest one, I felt, and I just
put a question mark next to it.
I just took it apart.
Gwenum's the other one. Yeah. I also put a question mark next to that because, I mean, they're still very new. The time will tell, but I don't think ultimately Green Goblin is as good as Kefka, which means that I don't think it's going to end up seeing as much tournament play.
I saw some people maybe like questioning like, why did the Spider-Man set not do well? And I feel like I have like an answer for that. The cards sucked. The cards weren't good.
Oh, all the cards were bad. Yeah.
It's like literally it's as simple as that. The set didn't do well because none of the cards were any good. Like, you have to have like a card that's like broken in multiple formats for like the set to do well, I feel like.
But nothing was good. And because it wasn't supposed to be for every format. It was supposed to be like some other kind of product that people who like Spider-Man would have enjoyed, because all the cards for that would have been fun and enjoyable.
Yeah. One card that I do think is interesting also, Peter Parker's Camera. I've seen some Magda players play that card. I think maybe that's something.
I think that is good in Magda. I don't think you ever want to search it up, but if it like happens to be in your opener, now you only need need three less treasures.
Yeah.
Which is funny that it takes three treasures basically to cast it and then activate it.
Is it good? I don't know.
But if they're happy with it, that's what matters because they're playing the deck and I'm not.
It allows for multiple reattempts or something.
Yeah. Like that. But that was Spider-Man. I don't want to spend any more time on Spider-Man.
There's no other cards in that set, right?
No, there really wasn't. I scrolled through the whole other set and there was nothing that anyone's playing anywhere.
About
that
Spider Sense card ever again.
No, me neither. Avatar literally just came out.
Great set.
Like the complete 180.
Complete opposite. And it's not just the power level of the cards. I think that is part of it. Like, their Avatar cards, like, there were several powerful cards. I don't know. It's something also about it just, like, felt a little bit, I don't know, more cohesive or something. It seems just like the fans of Avatar like the set a lot more
than
the fans
of
Marvel.
Avatar don't like a lot of the things that Avatar gets.
Right, yeah.
Like, all the live action things that are Avatar.
Well, they have some reason to not like some of the stuff.
I guess that makes sense, yeah. In general, I thought that this one was going to be very daunting because I know that as an Avatar fan, I know that, you know, we hold the source material in a very high regard and we want a lot of things to be very true to it. And Wan Shi Tong being the best card from the set for CEDH, for vintage probably, also insanely flavorful in every single way at the same time. What I didn't even realize is that, like, part of his character, if you want to have access to the library, you have to give him information that he doesn't have.
You have to search your library.
So that, yeah, so if you want to search your library, he's going to get something as well out of it too.
That's good.
It's such a cool card in every way.
Dude, I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Badgermal Cub, another
broken,
banger broken card from this set.
That card is so powerful. Like, I've already, like, noticed, we've already found, like, other little tiny things that it does. It seems like it's, like, turning Standard into an insane circus or something. The card is super powerful, which I like. I think that's fun when cards shake up the format and break everything. If it has to get banned somewhere, whatever, you know, that's fine. But we got to give it time. We can adapt. We can change. We're Magic players. We can figure out how to beat Badgermal Cub, but, like, it makes a lot of mana.
Oh, it does. And you know what? So does the Cabbage Merchant. If I could go back in time, I'd probably give my Cabbage Merchant rating bumped up a little bit.
I don't even remember what I gave it.
I think it was somewhere in the threes, like the high threes we ended up giving it because we ended up going, well, I'm a little bit skeptical as to how much mana it's actually going to make you that you're actually going to be able to use.
It's making a lot for you.
I haven't played it, but I was playing against one of our patrons, Big Legs Banjo, who was playing it in Rocco, and I was very scared of it there. We were playing on Playday, and I had to kind of tell the table, look, if we keep doing stuff like this, Cabbage Merchant is going to let, like, Rocco really find the exact thing that they need. Like, I was worried that he was going to Rocco X equals 4, go find Rector that he needs to win. And he had High Market in play already to sacrifice the Rector.
Yeah.
And he could just win right there. And if we feed him too much,
it becomes like a stacks piece. Like, if you cast a non-creature, Rocco wins.
That's the thing. And I don't think that that's something that, like, maybe I weighed heavily enough was that, like, it's going to affect how the rest of the board has to play because they have to watch out for when people can use it to their advantage and combo and win. Because if you don't have any other interaction, this is how you're going to have to stop those kinds of decks. The problem is that they're still going to be able to go off. If you gave them any mana off of it, it's still going to be good for them.
Dude, I haven't seen it come up in my personal Sisse experience yet, but I feel like it's got to be insane in Sisse for that reason, because Sisse is just like a button. Like, once I get to the right amount of mana, I can just, like, win on the stack. I feel like I could get into situations where it does act like a sacks piece there and just, like, stop everyone from doing something until I can win, but I haven't seen it come up yet for me yet. So I don't doubt that it makes a ton of mana. I saw it from one other player. It made 8 foods, which made them 4 mana, which was good. It got him a Thrasios activation. I just haven't seen the card enough. Card is going to be good, though.
I think it is going to be good. And I think once we solidify where its homes are, it's going to really shine there.
Yeah.
And it won't look bad. It will stop seeing play in decks where we know it doesn't belong in. Like I said, this is still, like, the very recent set. None of these cards have really had time to show us everything they can do. I think this is still probably one of the better sets that we had for the year, just in terms of the amount of staples for decks that were printed.
Yeah, we got 3 solid staples. And then if I remember correctly, there were a couple other, like, interesting cards that could go in certain decks too, right? Like,
or even like commanders too, that you could play. So I think this set ended up being like a gold star. I'm rating it a gold star.
A gold star. I like that.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yeah.
It seems like the best cards that printed this year were the three that came out in this set. Tezzeret, Nature's Rhythm.
Voice of Victory. Don't forget about that. If I have to do a top five, it's going to be Voice of Victory, Wan Shi Tong.
Really? Wan Shi Tong that high?
Wan Shi Tong that high.
Really? I have Voice of Victory, Nature's Rhythm, I think. And then I want to say Badrimal's Cub and then Wan Shi Tong. It's more than just another card advantage engine. But a lot of times I feel like it plays like just another card advantage engine that's just a little bit harder to cast.
But they always see play. Like two mana card advantage engines always see play.
It'll see more play than Badrimal, I think, just because more blue than green decks. But
more decks have the spaces to play it too. Like you have to want to be doing shit with your lands in Gaia's Cradle for you to want to be in Badrimal decks. If like you're just playing a blue deck that needs more card advantage, you can throw Wan Shi Tong in.
I feel like when Badrimal, when it hits the table, it does more right away. So I think that maybe is tainting my like feelings of how powerful it is.
Because, I don't
know.
I don't say taint because that gives it a negative connotation. And your opinion is not a negative connotation.
No, but like it just feels when Badrimal hits a table, that's six mana right now and 12 mana next turn. Whereas when Wan Shi hits a table, you draw a card. Okay, that's fine. You drew one card. That's fine. And then like you'll draw another card. And you'll draw another card. And eventually, it will spiral. But like Badrimal hits the table and the game is like suddenly about Badrimal.
I think that's because Gaia's Cradle is so good. Right. Wan Shi Tong is good on its own, which good. I think is why I rate it a little bit higher. Yeah. It doesn't have to be Synergy. I like good stuff better than Synergy, even though my favorite deck is a Synergy deck.
It's a Synergy deck, yeah. And then what would be like the fifth card? Tezzeret or would it be
Cabbage Merchant, I would say. I think Cabbage Merchant probably over Tezzeret right now because, again, I think it's a little bit more versatile and would go in more decks than Tezzeret.
It seems like all of these cards are not interaction. All of these cards are a threat in action. The format is going to pick up. I think this is another reason why. Like, the best cards that got printed this year, none of them were interaction. None of them slow the game down.
Which makes sense because now creatures and stuff like that are stronger than interaction. So we're not going to get Swords to Plowshares or anything that's on par with like counter spells that we're used to in a standard set.
But a lot of the cards, it's kind of tough because like the Avatar cards, I feel like those cards actually do, they can slow the game down a little bit. They can clog the game up by adding a whole bunch of resources. Whereas the other cards that we mentioned were like Tutors and the Voice of Victory. So like they maybe speed the game up a little bit.
I think that Cabbage Merchant and Badrimal Cub though can speed the game up. Making you more mana, they speed the game up because they progress you to the win faster, I guess.
Wan Shi Tong, I guess, can kind of also do that too. But it just, all the extra Rhystic Study shit, I think, slows the game down time-wise.
It takes you longer to get the same amount of value.
Right,
Okay. All right, well, those are the cards.
Yeah.
Should we talk about decks now?
Yeah. The decks that did well. Not the decks that we played, because we kind of
talked about that a couple weeks ago.
This is January right now?
The live podcast is coming out the day after Christmas, I think.
And then this comes out after that?
And then this comes out the week after that.
It's got to be January. What are we talking about?
Now I'm anxious about the timeline of things because I swap some things around.
Best decks of the year. Shit show best supervisor. Decks of the year. Like, get to it.
I told you that's what this is. Dude, started off really strong and then the mask came off.
No, it's still going very strong.
All right. Most played decks of the year. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Starting at number 12, Glarb, Calamity's Augur.
Interesting. Really? Most played. Okay.
Really? Yeah. Followed by Yuriko, Tiger Shadow.
Okay.
Followed by Kefka. Followed by Tivit.
Yep.
Followed by Atali.
Okay.
Followed by Magda. Followed by Rograk Silas.
Yes.
That's number six. And then the fifth most played is Sisse. Nice. The fourth was Rograk Thrasios. Third was Thrasios Timna. The fourth was Kinnan. And then the first king was Timna Krom.
Yeah,
obviously. Yeah. And it's pretty disparaging, like the difference. Like Timna Krom, 1,400 entries. But for Glarb, there's like 200 entries.
Oh, that is a big difference.
It's a huge difference. Yeah, very disparaging.
I kind of like that. I don't know. I like when a metagame is defined. I like knowing what to prepare for and what I'm going to see. So I like that there is a few amount of very popular decks that you know you're going to run into. I think that's a sign. I think that's a sign of a good format.
I think so too.
I think a lot of people like when there's 30 decks that are available. And yes, technically there are decks that are available, just not as many people play them. I think that means that the format is like too unsolved. It's too random.
I
like when I'm knowing what I'm going against, so I know what cards can be good in certain situations.
If it's too unsolved, there's no metagame.
There's no metagame.
It's like playing bracket four. Right. I like having the metagame.
I like having the metagame to kind of know what to expect.
I fully agree. Yeah. Now I'd like to note that we just figured out that today today is December 26th.
Yes.
Today is also December 12th.
So something could have changed in the next.
So there might be a couple of changes that are in that little time period, but I don't know how many CEDH tournaments are happening over a holiday weekend. And
I don't think a ton that would change the date.
Yeah. Now, I would like to also note how many tournament wins I can find in the same time period for these decks, though. Because Magda, for however many entries we saw, like 340, had one tournament win.
Magda only had one.
From what I can find, yeah. Now, again, I don't know how perfect a lot of this data is, but I found one Magda deck that won a tournament.
Okay.
I found six Atali decks that won tournaments,
six times as hard.
but I realized that three of them were from one person and two of them were from another person. Okay. Yeah. I'd also like to note that all of this data is based on events that were like 60 people and up.
Okay.
Specifically excluded like small events and stuff like that. Sisay had five event wins. Rograk Silas had seven.
Nice.
Along with Timna Thrasios also having seven wins I could find. Yeah. Rograk Thrasios had 13.
Oh, wow.
But I think there is a discrepancy with those winners because of
Cheating situations.
Yeah. So I'm counting that as 11, really. Yeah.
Two of those were confirmed cheats, I think,
I think so, yeah. I don't remember the details
for
them.
It's not funny. I'm laughing because it's miserable and
something
shitty.
Something about a taiga or a stomping ground.
Oh, yeah.
Hooray. And then Kinnan had 17 tournament wins.
Wow.
And then hold on to your hats, ladies and germs, because Blue Farm, 35.
Wow, twice as many? No, more than...
More than twice as many, yeah, which is kind of crazy, yeah.
Yeah, why aren't we playing Blue Farm?
Because we're playing Timna Malcolm for the opposite of Atali reasons instead, yeah.
Casual.
Yeah. Playing Atali as my main deck and then that, yeah. I just thought that was interesting. I think it just goes to show that, like, the more entries that you have, typically the more you're going to win.
Yeah.
This just kind of, like, solidified what the metagame kind of is, I think. Yeah.
I don't think we're super surprised by a ton of these, at least the top five or six. I feel like that's been pretty locked in for a little bit now. The 10, the Kefkas, the Yurikos, the Magdas, the Talis, the Tivits. I feel like those will rotate in and out. I haven't really seen a lot of Tivit recently, but all the other ones I've seen a ton of recently.
I haven't really seen a lot of Tivit either, but I guess there are certain parts of the world where it's seeing more play.
Okay.
It's funny how metagames are and how, like, we experience things completely different from a lot of other players because of, like, what they see all the time.
A couple commanders that I'm kind of surprised not to see here. Tyum. I don't know why. I think Tyum is powerful, and I feel like it would have shown up, but it doesn't seem like Stax continues to not be able to
How Staxy the deck is anymore, which might be good for it into mid-range hell, but also to its detriment because it's just like a slow combo deck.
Right.
Yeah. It's, again, it's like not easy to interact with, but like we didn't see Lumra here, and Lumra was another up-and-comer. What didn't come out this year, but gained popularity this year. Even though that deck is uninteractable, it's too slow to be considered a fast deck.
Yeah, I agree. It's like a turn three, turn four deck with no interaction, and like if you're gonna go all in on a win, you have to do it on turn two.
You gotta go on turn two. Yeah.
You have to be able to do turn two sometime.
Yeah, and that deck that you mentioned, that you said you were surprised not to see, that we were just talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Tyum. Tyum is also too slow to be
too
a fast deck. Yeah.
Too slow, too telegraphed. Any other ones that I'm surprised not to see? Not really. I think that those are the only ones. Winota is another one that we know Winota hasn't shown up more, but it's the same type of deal. It's like, if there were to be a Stax deck, I feel like this year kind of proved that Stax is just, you can't win in tournaments.
No. We're too in between metagames to be.
It's not an archetype anymore.
Exactly.
Cut it from your brains.
Some other decks that were popularized this year that weren't from this year.
Okay.
Just to throw out a couple of other things that people have been doing. Rao Monsoon Mage.
Yeah.
Popularized this year, but came out in the latest Modern Horizons set of 2024.
I could see that one growing in popularity and doing some numbers.
I agree. I think that deck is only going to get scarier and have like a Kinnan thing where it can like continue to grow and you'll get like some players that are absolutely insane with it. Yeah. Lumra, like we've been talking about, not from Bloomborough from 2024, but popularized this year.
If land stuff continues to grow, it's either Lumra or Wandering Minstrel right now. And I think there's a good argument for Lumra. We've talked about it's a little too slow sometimes, but a little bit more juice and maybe that bear can move.
I threw Tim the Dargo down here because it is kind of coming up a little bit in the meta.
Yep.
Didn't look up any of its stats, like how much it's winning or anything like that. But it's just another deck that is popularized this year that's coming back after we thought it wasn't going to be good because of the bans. And then Zuladuck is the last deck that I have on this list.
Okay, yeah.
This past month, like in particular, it's been seeing a lot more play recently. I guess it's just like a mid-range hell beater.
Type of a Tali type of deck, I would imagine.
Yeah,
right?
you can do things pretty quickly, but still slower than a Tali. I think it's going to have that same kind of Lumra thing where it's too slow for the fast decks, but it's really hard to interact with, which is why it's doing well right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Cascade is pretty nice. Yeah, that is difficult for decks to interact with. But you also get no interaction at all. So if someone does have the one thing that does interact with you, you don't really say anything about it.
You have that Spatial Contortion and Null Elemental Blast, and that might be it.
Whereas Itali gets like Red Blast and Pyroblast and stuff, right?
And Pyrokinesis too.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
Fury?
Yeah.
You have some good options.
There's some good stuff. Yeah.
You have some good options.
I like Itali.
Itali's so great.
So great.
That continues to be so fucking busted.
Yet another podcast that ends on us talking about how good Itali is.
I think all of these other decks make sense. I'm excited to play more Sisse and more Rog'Sai this year. I think what I'm doing, I think I'm going to, for my Terra deck, continue to put all of the weird fancy arts and all of the stupid shit.
Yeah.
And then Rog'Sai is going to be all old bordered, full frame, nostalgic looking deck.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
As many retro things as possible.
Originals,
And then Sisse is going to be Secret Lairs. As many Secret Lairs and Universes Beyond shit. That goes in Sisse.
Nice. Still like magic cards, but cool looking magic cards.
And I'm still going by the rule of two, even though I have three commanders because one of them is always looking to take over the other one. But so I'm still doing Sisse and Terra, I think, is my main decks, but Rog'Sai is looking to take Terra's throat.
Your decks feel like Bleach villains that are like trying to backstab each other and like get themselves higher in the ranks.
It's gotta work in the mind. You know what I mean? It's gotta work in the mind. That's how it works.
I need a third CEDH deck now.
Yeah,
I took apart VV and I thought I wanted to keep Raoul together.
And you don't.
And my win record with Raoul has been poor enough. I mean, what you saw on the channel, like, really wouldn't make you think that based on the Childewin and the gameplays that we did with Jane. But in my outside of the channel games, it has not been going very well. So I need to find a third CEDH deck.
Okay.
And I'm back to not knowing what the fuck it's going to be.
Yeah, because you have a fast deck and you have a slow deck.
And they're two total opposites. So I can build anything.
Kind of anything.
All my colors figured out over the two decks. Yep. Completely different strategies. So I'm wide open for what my third deck could be.
I know Marvel stuff is coming out soon, and I know Lorwyn stuff is coming out soon, and we just had Avatar stuff. I don't know if there's any Avatar things, or do you want to wait for like Lorwyn and Marvel, see if anything's there?
I'm probably going to end up waiting for Lorwyn and Marvel and see what we get. I don't think that any of the Fantastic Four cards that just got spoiled are any good, even though they're four
cool.
color identity creatures. They all have shitty abilities.
Yeah,
so
they're very flavorful, but I'd
rather play like Thrasios, Akiri, or Bruise or something like that instead.
Yeah, I think I agree. I have to take a look at a second time. None of the Marvel cards so far seem like they were any good. Makes me nervous. I hope we're not doing a Spider-Man
thing. I don't know what you're talking about, because there's one Marvel card that I'm looking at in particular.
Yeah, there's the Hulk thing. Yeah, we can talk about that real quick.
World War Hulk?
Yeah, World War Hulk.
How much time do we have? We interrupt the Play One podcast to bring you the special news bulletin about World War Hulk.
Yeah, a card that's coming out in 2026, but the preview is for 2025. It's an enchantment saga.
Yes.
For 5 mana, 3 generic and 2 green. And its first ability, the only one that is really relevant, says the next red or green creature spell you cast this turn, you may cast without paying its mana cost.
Which is Itali. Doesn't care if it's in your hand or in the command zone. Right. It's a 5 mana Itali.
It's got to be good, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the deck's really good at making red mana. I think that's the only thing that I'm a little bit nervous about. Gaia's Cradle.
Not
a lot of other decks are, but I still am. So I think that my build might be able to use it a little bit better. Like, there's worlds that you can go like Birds of Paradise into like Gaia's Cradle and like play the stupid creatures that can sacrifice for mana, then too, as long as like they ramp you with Gaia's Cradle. They can still like break you even, but it's still going to ramp you with Gaia's Cradle. Then that can still help you get this out early.
Elvish Spirit Guide, Command Tower, Lion's Eye Diamond, the Hulk card. Oh, no, you can't.
You can't do that.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, that's not good.
But you can do Elvish Spirit Guide, Land, Mana Vault, Lotus Petal, and the Hulk
Lotus
card.
Petal, there we go.
Yeah, so like there's going to be like 5 card hands that make this pretty good. It doesn't let you get around Command Tax. So like if I Twin Flame and I have a new copy of Itali in play and then my next Itali flips into this, I can still cast Itali from my command zone, but Itali will cost 2 mana.
Rather than nine,
which is still really good.
Yeah, I think that'll be good.
It's still really good. So there's going to be scenarios probably where you like Hellkite Courser, put it back in your command zone, and then it still costs 7, and then you can still get a free Itali with this then too.
Yeah.
And it's the next one that you cast this turn. So if you have like another way to sacrifice it without using a creature, I don't know that that's ever going to come up, but
there's some stuff that you can do.
Twin Flame and shit.
There's stuff that you can do for sure. Yeah, I think this card is going to be at least worth trying. Five mana Itali is going to be worth it.
Yeah, I think so too. Anything that helps me get Itali out a little bit sooner, I think is going to be good. And like, this is basically like another Treasonous Ogre.
Okay. It'll play out similarly sometimes.
I guess it's more like another Hellkite Courser, but
yeah,
I think it's definitely worse than Hellkite Courser.
Worse than Hellkite Courser, although technically a mana less.
Technically mana less. I mean, if you think of this as a 2-mana ramp spell, because it takes you from 5 to 7, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
And that's going to probably make me want to play that 2 and a red ramp spell that makes you 2 red and 2 green from call time.
Yeah.
Because I already put Mana Morphos in, which also means that you can just go like Seething Song into Mana Morphos into this, and that makes it easy too. That other thing, that card from Call Time, is also going to make it way easier to cast this too. So I think that this might end up being good. It might end up changing a couple of the other cards that you play to end up making it even a little bit better while also still not hurting the integrity of Itali at all.
Yeah, I think it's good. Also, like weird things like being able to like filter your mana or something. What if you can make only a bunch of green and you use that and then you can put in your Sticker Goblin and now you have all the red or whatever? It can help you like turn extra green mana into red mana when you need to.
I think it could be a Wandering Archaic replacement almost. Only because like
5 mana,
for the times that you see Wandering Archaic in your opening hand and you go, damn, I wish it was worth ramping to 5.
Like, this is worth ramping to.
This feels worth ramping to. Like this feels worth
because wasting your mana vault on a Wandering Archaic sucks.
That's the thing. Like, this is still a turn to Itali if you go like fetch land, mana vault, turn to another fetch land, Itali.
I think you're right. I think maybe Wandering Archaic is a good cut for this.
Yeah. Because this way I don't need to stay alive. I can just try to win the game and put an Itali on the stack instead.
I agree. Card's good.
Card feels good.
Anything else from 2025 you want to talk about?
Everything else we've already talked about, I guess.
It's a good year.
Maybe not. What defines like a good year?
What defines a good year? For who? For us, it was all right.
We had a great year. This was a great year. If you want to play to win wrapped, we hit 100,000 subscribers this year, and we're on our way to like an extra 30,000 after that, too.
Yeah, incredible.
We
cut that out.
No, don't. That was an inside joke.
I hope he sees that. See this coming. See it. Cut that.
Anything else you want to say about 2025?
No, thanks. Thanks for making this possible. This is incredible that we were able to do this and record this podcast and shit.
So thank you for continuing to tune in this year, and we're excited to see you in 2026.
Thank you so much for watching. If you like sports directly, you can just join Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Oh, yeah. We have to save some stuff for next week, because next week's podcast is going to be the predictions for 2026 episode.
Boom.
Where we talk about all the things that we expect to come in 2026 from the new sets that we're getting.
I can't wait.
Although it's going to have to be a little bit different than normal.
Shit show supervisor. That's your job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, put me to work. Here we go. Thinks MTG, Wandering Around, Mike H, Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Okie Toad, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Eye, David Newman, Johnny Denver Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fire, Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larson E. Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, S.E. Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Legs Banjo, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Gaber Garrett, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Demon of Raspberries, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Toot, Luke Quadja, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you know that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thanks, Dragon Show, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
50s.
Let's hear them, $50 patrons.
Rick, Shardicus, Mick Saucy, Max McComber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Ash Wayne, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
What's the funniest fart noise you can make with your mouth? That's good. Ooh, a little wetness at the end.
I love the wetness at the end.
No, I'm trying to work on like a trumpet type of. I can't, you know what I mean?
Like you're trying to tune it?
I can't. All right, that's it.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.